In this episode, Rick explains how he's getting more hands-on with marketing. Let's go. Welcome to Startup to Last, a podcast about founders who are in it for the long haul.
I'm Rick, and I run a software-enabled services company called Leg Up Health.
And I'm Tyler. On the side, I work with Rick on Leg Up Health, but my main business is a bootstrapped SaaS company called Less Annoying CRM. What up, Rick?
What's up, Tyler? How are you doing this week?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm much better than you. I don't have COVID.
I don't anymore. I'm past the window, but yes, I am. I have a lingering cough from COVID going on, so hopefully that doesn't appear in this podcast.
Yeah, if there's a long break of silence, and just I can hear probably or see Tyler coughing, you will not be able to hear it, but that is what is happening.
Yeah, or maybe I'll forget to mute myself. We'll see.
Ooh, that'd be a good one. I was thinking about you the other day. We lived in Draper, and they had a Cafe Rio there that was absolutely disgusting. And I stopped eating Cafe Rio because that location was so bad. But we've recently moved to a new neighborhood. We ordered Cafe Rio for the first time in a while. It was so good. And I know that's one of your favorite places in Utah.
If anyone doesn't know Cafe Rio, it's basically like what Chipotle would be if it didn't suck. Fuck Chipotle. I hate Chipotle. If you like Chipotle, you're wrong. It's just like the same format, but everything has flavor and is delicious, and the tortillas are fresh made. Everything's amazing. I'm sorry you used to live next to a bad Cafe Rio. But you're enjoying it now?
I am enjoying it now, so I thought of you, and I almost called you over it.
Nice. But well, I'll be in Utah later this month, and I'm definitely getting Cafe Rio.
Exactly. I was hoping you would allude to that. I would love to get together when you're here. I will be in mm-hmm. town, so we need to work that out.
Yep.
I have a big update. We have made a lot of progress. We were going to have a partners meeting. So at Leg Up, Tyler's a partner. JD's another partner. We have three partners. We meet every third Monday of the month to catch up. We were going to meet on Monday, so I was super excited to tell you about all this stuff, but we're going to push it back a week because of some conflicts. But it's exciting because since the last partner meeting, we basically said there's Rick and JD are going to focus on the same thing, which is building the outbound machine versus breaking up into two groups and going after two different things. Mm-hmm. And it's been so fun. So there's kind of two updates. One is it's working. We're starting to get inbound. We're starting to build momentum. And then I've got a couple of observations that I just wanted to share with you and the listeners around just things that are being reinforced through this, which is the power of, one of those things is the power of focus. Just the fact that JD and I are focused singularly on the same thing allows our time together and a time apart to be so much more productive and make so much more progress in a short amount of time. It's also we share the same wins, and so it's like this. It's very contagious.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And as an outsider observing, it also kind of strikes me as your role being you're the founder, you're the owner, but you don't have a ton of time to put into it right now. I do think it's easy to get removed from like this phase of a startup is not strategic, right? It's go do the work. And because you don't have the time to do the work yourself, I think I fall into this trap too. You look for other things maybe I can go brainstorm about this or whatever. I love the fact that you're so close to the core thing that needs to be happening now, even if you're not putting in most of the time.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. What ends up happening when you're in my situation, you just create distraction and you make it harder for the person who's actually doing the thing that matters to succeed. So I've removed that distraction and also sort of doubled down on helping. It's been really, really fun.
Yeah. Cool.
The main thing, another takeaway around cold calling that we're observing is that outbound cold prospecting in general is that I think a lot of people focus on quantity of, in terms of the number of accounts that you're going after, the number of people that you're reaching out to, and the number of activities you're completing. And when you do that, you lose sight of whether or not it's actually moving the needle. And so what we found is that optimizing for, in particular, a conversation, even if that conversation is 15 seconds, is much more important than having a volume. So I'd rather, you know, if I could figure out how to get JD 15 second conversations with ICP accounts a day, with five calls, that would be ideal. But it doesn't matter how many calls we have to make. We just have to get to those five conversations. And it changes the whole dynamic in terms of how you build the content you're out reaching out with, and then also like the steps in the outreach process.
So I'm having trouble with just imagining the specifics here. Like what were you doing and what are you doing now? And what changed because you decided to focus on quality?
Yeah. So it wasn't necessarily that we decided to focus on quality. It was that we said we changed the outcome. The outcome we were optimizing for before was let's put as many accounts into a cadence as possible. Mm. We prospected 1,000 accounts in the last month. And what we've shifted is how many people have we actually talked to and had a conversation with that, you know, and we call it profiling them, but have we found out whether they offer, you know, group health insurance or not?
Yeah.
Which is like what is their current health benefit situation? If we know that.
So you're saying before you were one step up in the funnel and you had maybe 10 times as many quote unquote leads, but maybe you weren't getting to the next step
with any of them. Yeah. We weren't having any meaningful conversation.
So what did you do to change to get the conversations?
So when we first looked at JD's flows, it was, step one and two and three were all asynchronous, written communication. There was a LinkedIn request, an email number two, and there was no phone calls. And so it required someone, you know, replying and then JD replying to get a conversation going. So what we did was we drafted a call script. We changed the email structure, but we drafted a call script and put that as step one. So before you can send the first email, you've got to make a phone call. And that alone has made the difference because you have some percentage of chance every time you make a phone call that someone's going to answer.
Right.
And that's a conversation.
Yeah. I know that the point you're making is bigger than just calling works and emailing doesn't. I know that's not the takeaway exactly, but just to echo that a little, you know, we have done the whole thing with buying leads and trying different follow-up. And the problem we always had is we can convert them, but it's really time intensive to do the calls. And we found a much cheaper lead source that was cheap enough that we're what if we can just email them? And even if we only get, 5% as many conversions, it's cheaper enough. And then we don't have to spend all the time doing the calls. This would work great. Anyway, so we tried that. Zero responses. And these were people who opted into getting outreach from CRM companies. So just to say, as much as I hate cold calling, I never want to be cold called. I've only done three cold calls in my life and I'm never doing another. It certainly seems to be the case that if you're trying to sell something, being willing to get on the phone is a huge, huge unlock.
Absolutely. And what it does for LegUp Health in particular is gets that conversation started. And then when you have that conversation, you can then pitch. And there is a conversion rate on pitches, micro pitches, big pitches. It could be 1% or it could be 15% or it could be 50%. And so if you do enough of those, it turns into pipeline eventually. And it's just no matter what business you're in, as long as you have a meaningful offering. So that's the big shift, is shifting away from trying to do a lot of accounts and more to focusing on getting JD a conversation with an ICP prospect, no matter how small or short or cold that conversation is.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, and I can tell you've got energy and you feel like this is going well. And the two things I've heard, one, you're kind of pairing with JD. That's one of the big changes. And two, more of an emphasis on calling and less of an emphasis on email are the two inputs that have gone into this so far.
Yes. And there's a larger sort of framework that I think was an unlock too for our pairing. So the other thing is pairing is important. And so we bring different skill sets to the problem solving. So JD is, he is a hustler. He will execute the play and he will do it 1,000 times and he will make it better over and over again. Where I come in is what are we actually building here? What's the system that makes this work and makes it easier, over time, so that, we're not just building a rat race here. We're actually building a system that makes our, makes money. Mm-hmm. And so we started, we kind of took a step back before we got into the weeds and said, what are we actually building here? And we outlined basically a, for lack of a better word, a flow diagram flowchart of, hey, like, here's a bird's eye view of what, like, the ideal outbound prospect like process is, and here's what it feeds in terms of a marketing, you know, sort of demand generation machine, and here's how that demand generation machine then feeds back to the sales, you know, sort of cadence. And it, what it showed was there are very clear, like, 6 to 10 very specific components that we need to get right as part of the system. You know, 3 of which are very related to the outbound cadence, and the outbound cadence is the predecessor to being able to build the marketing machine. So it got us both excited to say, hey, let's partner on these first 3 things, get this outbound thing working. And once that's working, it's going to unblock this marketing machine thing that's going to make your, you know, give you even more leads. And then that's going to unblock advertising, which is going to give us even more leads. And that's going, and then we can hire people to do this outbound cadence. It's going to give us even more leads. So this virtuous sort of system cycle that we see that we've built is motivating.
Yeah, that's cool. That all sounds great. And for you, like, you're an experienced entrepreneur and you have experience kind of running more sophisticated, like, larger companies. And so you know how this all works. I could imagine someone listening, hearing that and being kind of intimidated by, like, there's these 6 things and they all have to work together, whatever. Can I, like, pitch you on a simpler version of what you just said? Not to say that you and JD should do it, but, like, someone who's just getting started maybe would take this away, which is what I heard, first of all, is you said it goes from sales to marketing to, I forget the 30 thing, but it sounded like you were moving up the funnel. I know you're thinking of it as a cycle, but like you're starting now. Like, if you think of what you're doing now as starting, and then there's more to come later, it sounds like you started as close to the money and as close to the buyer as you could, rather than starting optimizing at the top of the funnel, which is kind of what email was, a little higher up the funnel, and saying, how do we get this thing to trickle down into high quality leads? Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
Kind of. I think most people, the mistake they make is they think of this as a funnel versus a flywheel. And so my methodology for thinking about this is much more in terms of a flywheel, a compounding, you know, sort of processes versus like a you know, trying to optimize for the perfect journey.
That's fair enough as a way to think about it. But like, practically speaking, you have to do something. Where do you start? And I think it can be really intimidating to say, oh, I've got to get this whole machine working. And the thing that's working right now is the thing that's closest, like in the flywheel, the thing that's closest to the person who's actually going to buy, it sounds like.
Yeah. So raw, like at the top of the funnel is raw leads, like if any funnel. And so what is the best input for raw leads? Well, it's a person going and finding your ideal prospect and putting them in a spreadsheet. Like, that's the most controllable aspect of raw leads. And that's what we're focusing on, like, as input number one. Then you've got to figure out, like you could spam all those people with a marketing email, right? Like, that's one option. Or you can try to create what's called a captive sort of audience that has some sort of affinity that you validate, like a validated list to start to nurture from a marketing standpoint. And so what we're saying is, we don't want to be like that marketing spam engine. We want our marketing to be less spammy, not maybe it's still spam, but and so what we've said is we're going to focus on building the manual process of building the raw lead list through our outbound cadence, validating that list and profiling that list through the outbound cadence, and then once they reach a certain, you know, level of like confidence in terms of quality of data, pushing that into our marketing engine for purposes of like nurturing and long-term sort of opportunity generation.
Yeah. I guess my point is, I'm not hearing any marketing yet, which is good. I think is good. Like, you're doing sales. This is just sales right
now.
What
is marketing, Tyler? Let's have this conversation. Like, I think you're talking about like, you're not hearing anything about advertising or.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, I think of marketing as one to many and sales as one to one. That's maybe an oversimplification, but no, but like if you had a company with like a chief revenue officer that oversees biz dev and sales and marketing, like who would be doing the things JD is doing right now? The sales team would be.
Yeah.
Or the SDRs would be, right?
Yeah. So lead generation is a marketing function, just as like competitive analysis is a marketing function, just as, you know, branding and positioning is a marketing function. And we're doing a lot of that stuff. But like, I think what you're talking about is particularly like marketing, with the goal of generating like leads for sales.
Wouldn't SDRs be under the sales department, not the marketing department?
Yeah. So I think, again, you're thinking of marketing as a function versus like a function in a funnel, in a supply chain versus like it's holistic across the entire.
Yeah, I hate that definition of marketing. Yeah. Everyone's like, everything's marketing. It's like, well, then let's make up the word for the thing we all mean.
I'm not saying everything is marketing. I'm just saying that it's not as simple as just just passing leads to sales.
Okay. Anyway, fair enough. And everything you're saying makes sense and I think is right. I'm just trying to dumb this down for like the, you don't want an MBA. You don't even want to understand how this works. You just want to do the minimum viable version of this. My takeaway is fucking call people. and try and talk to them about your product and then build on top of that later.
Or do what you did, which is, you know, spend, you know, a very small amount of money on digital advertising or creating an inbound flow. If you can afford to do that. I tried that. It didn't work.
We have a self-serve product. I think that I thought a lot about the difference between these two businesses. And I think that's the difference is like our product is designed to work without ever talking to anyone. And how do you sell a service without talking to someone, you know?
Yep.
But anyway, we can move on.
The other thing. Well, I do think like I kind of get in what your point is, like, which is like, hey, you got to get started somewhere. Where's the highest leverage for your business? You know, we've identified that as the process of building a target account list manually through sales, doing outreach with the goal of learning about them and validating them, and then you know that should lead to some amount of meetings. But then that is sort of the beginning of our. Marketing or our demand generation machine, for like I don't want to call it marketing, our growth machine, and you know that if we can't, that is the most important thing to get right first, and then it feeds this other stuff that matters because it will make that work better over time. But you always have to have that spear point, right? Like in that for us, that spear point is the manual prospecting and outbound. For you, I think it was ad digital advertising. And for someone else, it might be partner referrals. It could be, you know, something else.
Yeah, but they're all lower in the like the thing I'm trying to avoid, the mistake I've made, and I see a lot of people I follow on Twitter and a lot of podcasts I listen to are, I think, currently making this mistake, is they're like, I'm going to go build an audience. I'm going to go write a newsletter. And that newsletter is going to turn into customer. And it's like, that can work, but you need like 100,000 people to read a blog post to turn into one customer. That is not the game you play when you're first getting this engine going.
Agreed. Yeah. There's like, your point I think is that I think you said something about like, you're getting closest to the dollar as possible, in terms of like, how to turn activity into money. And that's what, like, if you could go back in time, do you think you would have done some outbound outreach to get your first customers?
I think it would have worked well. I know my own, like there's a whole separate side to this, which is play to your strengths. And yes. If I had JD on the team, we would be a much more successful company than we are, because he would have gone out and cold called some people, or he would have found a way to talk to people one-on-one. And right now that doesn't scale for us, but like in the early days when you just need your first 5 or 10 or 20 customers, if you have what it takes to do that, and JD does, then I think that works better than what I did.
But I'm also hearing you say is actually that's not the tip of the spear for us. It doesn't work with our revenue model. And so no, that actually, like, maybe that would work for helping us get to sustainability, but it's not part of building. It's not the tip of our spear for our growth engine.
Not for the scaling part.
Yeah. No. And so that's what I'm talking about here is like, you know, what is we've identified that we cannot be successful unless we build this machine. And so it's a tip of our thing. And you know, if you have a captive, like going back to your audience example, if you have a captive audience and you are building a product based on the learnings from that audience, hell yeah. Like take the audience first approach. You've already got the audience.
Yeah. But like, but if you're building like, an audience so that you can do that.
Exactly. Yeah.
That makes sense. And yeah, I do forget. We still talk about Leg Up Health like it's kind of the early days. We're at 6 figures in revenue. Like I'm comparing it to the first 10 customers of Less Annoying CRM. I should be comparing it to the 100th customer of Less Annoying CRM.
I had that realization this week too, where I was like, oh wow, Leg Up Health is past where I took over Zane Benefits.
Wow, yeah. That's a weird way to look at it. Huh. That's cool.
And I've been Zane here before.
Ended up being huge compared to that. So, yeah. Awesome. Cool. What else? What's on your mind?
I have one more takeaway from that conversation, then I will stop talking about outbound. If you choose to do outbound as the tip of your spear, obviously we've talked about the cold calling, like getting a conversation is more important than like sending 10,000 emails and like being tired at the end of a week. But there is an element of mentality and hustle that is very important to have. I think to make it successful, you have to have consistency daily on a daily basis. You have to have positive attitude. You have to have confidence that it's going to work. And if you can do that and string it together, it actually does build a lot of momentum. And even if you're not making money, but you're moving people down the funnel, it is a good feeling of progress when you are starting to see the seeds get planted and the seeds that you've planted come to sort of sprouting. And JD's at that moment right now where he's starting to see some inbounds from his replies. He's starting to have connections on cold calls. He's also seeing people hit the website more and they're like, I heard about you. So there's this like, you know, kind of like it's harvesting time now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's pretty fun.
I tried to move on and now I'm going to belabor it even more. Like, so a topic that I've been thinking about a lot lately, I subscribed to some new podcasts recently because I was like a lot of the old ones I listened to stopped having episodes. And a thing I keep seeing, I follow a lot of people who are very like wildly successful, like hundreds of millions of dollars plus net worth, like from their own startup type stuff. And so many of them, basically all of them, either exited or are like, I have to exit. Like the only option is to exit. And when you dig into it, they're all like, it's because the whole process of running a company is miserable and no one would ever want to do this. And every time I hear that, I just can't relate. I'm like, it's fine. It's better than a job. It's better than what everyone else is doing. But the thing that I'm realizing is it's because they're not building a business that they want to work at. And I think this gets back to your question of like, if I could go back in time, would I do that with less annoying? And even if it would work, the problem is then you're in this, you're on this career path that has to, you want to get out of. And the thing I love about working with you and JD is I think JD especially, he gets energy from this. I think he'd be happy doing this long term. Like he'll learn more, he'll get better, he'll do bigger things, but like he gets energy from, I'm calling people, they're picking up the phone, I'm talking to them. If I had to do that, I'd be like, can I do it? Maybe. I'm going to quit in 6 months if this is my job, you know?
Yeah. And same for me, like I would get exhausted. Like what gives me energy is building the system. Like, and that's why I go straight to that, you know, bird's eye view. And JD's, I think like, I don't want to put words in his mouth cause he's not here, but he would say is like, I think he looks forward to if he can perfect this and build it, teaching other people how to do it successfully, mm-hmm. helping them build a career. Like that's where he really enjoys the coaching and the training elements. And so for him, like the path to like making this successful for himself is not just about making like LegUp Health successful, but making it repeatable so that he can hire someone.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, cool.
Yeah. What else? What's going on in your world?
I've got a few things to talk about, but, I guess I'll just stay on the same topic I've been talking about for a while, which is the TTS, the talk to sales stuff. I think everyone knows, but I'll give a quick recap, which is we did the obvious thing that we hadn't, you know, 15 years into the business, we hadn't tried yet, which is when someone goes to our marketing site, give them the ability to set up a schedule a call with a salesperson. And just the summary, I'd say there's been three phases of this. Phase one is if you go to our marketing site, on our homepage, there's a 10-second delay, and then it's almost like a chat bubble, except you can't chat. Pops up that's like, hey, do you want to schedule a call? If you go to the pricing page, it's a 2-second delay and it pops up. Basically, that's a way to get on the phone with Alex, our sales guy. That was version one. And, you know, you're always experimenting and trying things and you're always hoping for it to be a home run and it never is. Like, this is the first home run I've had in like 12 years, I think. Like, it's just worked. We're now up to 70 users, paying users from the first month of doing this. So it's going great. V2 was, if Alex is free, because it's not like he's booked all day, if he's free and someone clicks that link, instead of saying, go schedule a call, it takes him to a page that's like, do you just want to talk right now? Like, he's free. That was a complete dud. We can maybe unpack why. Version 3, which I just launched on Monday, it's Thursday right now. Version 3 was when someone goes in and does a live demo, meaning they're trying out the software, but they haven't signed up. It's like a demo, like a marketing demo. It doesn't actually, it's not their real account. I built a report for Alex. He can see who those people are. He can see how many users they have. And if he's free and they're actively using it, he can click a button and it pops a thing up on their screen that's like, hey, Alex is around to talk right now. Like, do you want someone to walk you through this? Results are still not in for that, but so far I'd say not optimistic about it. Basically, there are constantly people getting this demo offer and no one's accepting it. So that's where we are right now. I have things to say, but yeah, reactions.
I mean, it'd be interesting to, I mean, do you guys have like a, some sort of journey that you're mapping around like the ideal person? It sounds like if you there's a point in time post live demo that they're like, yeah. I have my list of questions now. Right. And I need to talk to someone to make a decision. And so this is more of a timing thing, and tracking, hitting them with the offer at the right time, more so than hitting them with the offer.
I would have disagreed with you when we started this. I would have said the thing that the people we're targeting with this are the enterprise buyers that they're not thinking product first. They're thinking, I have a checklist and I want to talk to a sales rep. That's what I thought. Alex has determined pretty much everyone he's talking to does the live demo, then goes back to our homepage and then books this call. And they don't know that that offer is going to be there necessarily. So that means they're like, they do the live demo and then they're like, I'm going to go look at the marketing site and try and learn more or something. I don't know what we need to figure out what they're looking for. But so, yes, I think you're right. They're all doing the live demo. Then they talk to Alex. So, yeah, is what you're getting at. Maybe like we need to time it with when they're done with the demo kind of.
Yeah. Or say, you know, kind of preempt the, you know, objection, which is, hey, we see people come in live demos all the time. We know that sometimes you're gonna have questions that aren't gonna be answered. When you're ready, we're here.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily a CTA, it's a planting of seed.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good thing to try. So there, I had my own hypothesis that I think yours is more believable, but I'll say mine anyway, which is I still believe mine too, which is I just don't think so. If I've said this on the podcast before, if I get a voicemail from my dentist and they're like, hey, we need your insurance information, I'm like spending 15 minutes being like, okay, I got to call the dentist. Do I have my insurance card? How do I say hello? How do humans say hello? What do I do with my hands? I just don't like talking on the phone. I think the more people are like me than I realize. I think when they get the offer and it's like, do you want to talk right now? I think people actually want to schedule it in the future. That's one thing I'm taking away from this, especially phase two of it. Does that sound?
I agree with that. Yeah. I think like if they're not ready for a call, when you're offering a call, they're going to schedule it in the future.
Yeah. But I mean, some of these people literally click the button that's like talk to sales. It's one thing for the people who are in the middle of a demo. They're doing a different thing. But some of them clicked the button saying talk to sales. And we're saying you can talk to us right now. And they're like, nah, we have a link.
You're saying that mentally most people want to prepare for a call.
Yeah. Or something. But, yeah. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. No, so that's
one
that.
Thing. And then what I'm hearing from you is also the right time to talk to sales is not step one of the evaluation process. And so I don't know. Yeah, maybe I can think more about this, but like giving them the offer when they want it, there's potentially a much higher number of people who would want to talk to sales if we could get them that offer at the right time. But the timing is off right now.
Yeah, and I guess backing up for a second, I'm trying to accomplish a couple of things when I say do that. One is like, I want to know who these people are. So when someone is at a live demo, do we have an email address associated with them? No. And have we so like, that's the thing that I would be optimizing for potentially during the live demo is trying to get Alex some pipeline that he can track. If the funnel is, most of the people who chat from sales are people who've looked at the live demo after, you know, they book after. I'd want to know, try to figure out, okay, who's looking at live demos? And is there something we can do to sort of convert them to an identity? And then Alex is sort of monitoring that pipeline. And if those people aren't turning into sales, he's working them like a salesperson would.
Yeah. The hard thing is the difference between a live demo and just signing up for an account is giving us your email address. Mm. So like, if we say, give us your email address to create a live demo, it kind of loses a lot of its appeal, I think.
That's not what you do. Maybe it's something like, maybe the offer is less about scheduling a call and it's more about like, hey, would you like us to, you know, would you like to be in our, you know, newsletter, or would you like to get the buying checklist for the less annoying, you know, CRM?
I think that's right. I would guess that a lot of these people wouldn't mind giving us their email address. There's this like mental hurdle of like the moment I sign up, it's like a commitment or something. Even there's no credit card. There's no reason. People should just sign up for a free trial immediately and start trying it out. But they don't think that like the human brain doesn't work that way. So, yeah, getting their email address, but in a way where they don't even for a moment have that like, am I crossing to the next step thought.
Yep. And I have a, this is a mind warp, but just in general, like how good is your, I'm thinking about Lucid right now. And you know, I don't remember back in the day, but their play was like, they would get a free user on Lucid Flow chart account, but then they would invite collaborators from their company to work on it. And then they would see, oh, we've got 10 free users at Microsoft. Let's go sell Well, not Microsoft's a terrible example, but like, because they have a competitive product, but,
The land and expand.
Yeah, the land and expand.
And so, Slack did this too. Yeah.
Yeah. How good are you all at when someone signs up for a free trial and you get that email address, enriching that profile with like the opportunity size and saying, oh, this is a self-serve or this is a sales lead?
Well, so here's the hard thing there. So what we do right now is when they sign up, we ask them how many users they expect to have. And if it's, I think if it's over 10, Alex reaches out to them. No matter what, we reach out to every customer and are like, do you want a demo? What can we do to help and all that? But Alex, like mostly it's coming from customer service. If it's over 10 people on top of that, Alex reaches out and is like, hey, if you want like a real sales thing, let's go.
Oh, cool. So you got that motion built. So this is really about like people who aren't signing up for free trial, who we don't know who they are. How do we capture them into that flow?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like it seems to me like you should continue this. So I'm going to jump into like solutioning. I think that like if I were you, what I would do is I would continue to like offer schedule a call as a constant CTA. But then I would probably mix in secondary offers to try to get people to convert so that Alex can better qualify them for more aggressive outreach.
Yeah. And in terms of offering it more, I think the thing that we're probably missing right now is like right now it's kind of a, do you want this offer? Yes or no. If you say no, it's gone. And I think what we probably need to do is figure out a way to make it more permanent and make the person know it's permanent. So it's like, when you're ready, here's where you come back to do that. Because I bet we're only capturing a small number of people who just happen to go back to the homepage.
The other thing that I'm thinking about here is these people are very like when we were talking about Leg Up, we were like, we're talking about the top of the funnel. Like people don't even know who we are. We're talking about the bottom of the funnel here.
Yeah,
people who are buying a CRM. Do you guys have any content that you're surfacing up through this journey around like, let's teach you how to buy a CRM. Let us teach you how to buy a less annoying CRM and the considerations associated with that.
We have that content. We actually had, it was kind of cool. Some like LinkedIn influencer did that's like a positioning expert did like a breakdown of us recently and very complimentary. And they were like, this proves they know who their buyer is. Anyway, I don't know. That felt cool. But content. We do not surface it really. So to be honest, the biggest eye-opening thing about this most recent round of talk to sales stuff, we've had this live demo thing forever, but we don't really have any metrics around it. We haven't built any reporting or anything around it. There are like right now there are, like during this time of day, roughly one live demo gets started every 3 minutes. There is a huge number of people doing these live demos, like way beyond the number signing up for free trials. And like, I'm just looking, I'm like eyeballing the report I built for this. And it's like, they seem like real people. These are not bots, I don't think. They're like clicking around, they're actually using it. So setting aside the talk to sales thing, now I'm just like, wow, like surely there's something we can do here. We already obviously do a lot to make the product good and to try to make the product appealing, but we haven't really like thought of the live demo users as a marketing angle in quite a while.
Yeah. So yeah, it would be nice if you could figure out how to convert as many of those people into real like identities that you could qualify. That would be like what I would be trying to, that would be the game that I'd be playing.
Real identities qualify. And then Alex follows up with the ones that are worth following up with.
Yeah. You want to like, I think your brand is, hey, you know, I'm not going to be annoying. So like, you know, there's sort of a pathway one, but then there's like this other pathway, which is like, how can we align to like the brand, but also get them to give us their email address, you know, or answer some questions.
So like the thing we're not going to do, but that some companies would do here is like, you can use their IP and say, this IP is coming from this corporate, you know, most companies, if it's coming from an office, you can tell who it is. And then like, we're going to call their front desk and be like, hey, you want like someone at your company is looking at Less Annoying CRM right now. Can we talk to them?
There's some really cool like account-based marketing tools where if based on people hitting your website, their IP address, a tool will help Alex ascertain what company they work for. And you could do it that way. But I think I think that's
Too much for us.
Yeah, I would focus on just trying to convert like be offer value to these people in exchange for information, and try to get more like a better understanding of who these people are. Yeah. And schedule a call is a very like strong offer. There's like softer offers of like, hey, here's a, we've put together this buying guide. You know, if you, all you need to do is tell us your email address and your company size in order to get it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'll put some more thought into that. Thank you. Great.
Can I just say that, good job.
Thank you.
This is good stuff.
This is the first I talk about, how long have we been doing the podcast? Like 4 years or something. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking about various marketing and sales experiments, and this is the first time it's even kind of worked, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. I appreciate that. It feels good. Energy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I think of the bird, you're focusing on a machine right here. And what you're saying is like, you got the free trial thing working. You got this other thing that's been totally not optimized, that's feeding from the other stuff, but it's all coming eventually. I think most of your traffic source is word of mouth, right? Like it's
at least it's organic in the sense it's someone like Googling Less Annoying CRM. And when we ask people, it's word of mouth, or in many cases it's they like, so this is another thing we're doing. I don't know if we probably don't have time to get into this right now, but like, we have one of the best marketing channels we've got is like random websites that do reviews of CRMs. And so like PC Mag has been a big one for us. They did a review of us a while ago, and Alex, every time he talks to someone, he's like, how'd you hear about us? It's word of mouth, or it's like, I saw you on one of these sites. Those are the two main ways.
Yep. It's awesome.
Yeah. Cool. You want to talk about vesting?
Yeah. So, context here is, Tyler and I did a deal to get him to be a partner of LegUp Health. We made some assumptions last July around vesting terms for that. I should have prepared more for this. I think you'll have to remind me of the terms, but I believe it was getting to a certain number of customers on LegUp benefits to trigger the initial vesting, and then it was a linear vesting from there over a period of time, correct?
Yeah. So the way I remember it, there's like the total pot of what I'm getting is basically like once I've vested everything, every time you make money, however it's whether it's through distribution, selling equity, whatever, I get 10% of that same amount.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I'm fully vested. Well, and as long as I'm actively working. So right now I get 10%. If I quit right now, I don't. I vest half of it when the cumulative sales for the software, the SaaS product I built, hit $10,000. And then at that point, I vest the rest gradually over 5 years. I think that's the agreement.
Yep.
The reason I brought this up with you is the intent behind that first vesting period, there's nothing magic about the $10,000 number. It was like, that was your way of de-risking so that like, it's like, is this software actually something that's valuable to the business? Did I do my part of it? When I did my part of it, I would get half. I think that was kind of the intent behind it.
Yep.
The thing is, now we're offering that product as a freemium lead gen for just selling insurance products mostly. And so the hitting the $10,000, I think the software is providing value. I think it's satisfied what in spirit that was meant to suggest, but we're not actually making the money directly from the software. So that $10,000 number is pretty far away still.
Well, we're at $600 a month, $700 a month, and recurring billings. And so, you know, I think if we were to like fast forward, like 700, let's say we took 10,000 divided by like 700, how many months would it take? 14 months. So like we're on track probably, you know, by August to have this 50% vested under the current vesting, agreement. But I think what you're saying is like, hey, it'd be really nice if you just like said, hey, we pivoted, recognized the pivot. We did what was right. And like, let's trigger this thing.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm asking for here. Because like when we were negotiating this original deal, the hope was that it would trigger at the end of last year. Mm-hmm. The hope was like I'd ship this product around mid-July, which happened, and then JD would go sell it. And I think the thought was if things go according to plan, it would be around, you know, end of 2023, beginning of 2024.
Yep. And just to reiterate for everyone, like the way this works is this is fundamentally like the deal is this is vesting for an excise tax paid to Tyler on any funds paid to me from LegUp. While Tyler is active as a partner, which is very loosely defined, regardless of vesting, he gets this tax. So this this vesting period is really around, like, if Tyler decides no longer to be an active partner, will he continue to receive the tax? And if at what rate? The full rate, or a portion of that vested rate.
Yeah, and the reason I care about that, I don't plan on leaving anytime soon. I don't expect you to fire me, but it's more to start the 5-year countdown.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and so my fear, by the way, like, I'm going to say yes to this, just for everyone, Tyler's my friend. And fundamentally, like, the way that I thought about this was, if Tyler is focused on helping me make money for the rest of my life, through Leg Up Health, as long as Leg Up Health exists, that is good for me. Tyler's really smart. And he's also a person I enjoy spending time with. So having this, like, thing that we're tied together on, that's my, helps my family and then also helps him, is, like, super aligned to, like, the relationship I want to build with Tyler. And so it's a very easy thing to say yes to. Plus, Tyler kicked ass over the last year in terms of doing, like, not letting the compensation agreement drive what was best for the business. And so, like, this is a no brainer to say yes to. But, like, what I'm thinking through, like, so that's the angel, right? The devil is saying, well, Tyler's going to quit in 5 years, and you're going to be screwed. And then you're going to have this excise tax, that you're paying, for someone who's not helping you. And it's like, I think in these situations, you have to really think through, like, who you want to be as a person. And also the relationship you want to build with the person you're doing business with. And this is something like, what's the worst case scenario? Worst case scenario is, we trigger the vesting. 5 years from now, Tyler's like, peace. and every $100,000 I make, I have to pay him. Is it 10% or 5%? What is it?
It's 10% once it's fully vested. Yeah,
10%. So I pay him 10 grand. And if it's $1 million, I pay him 100,000. And if it's $2 million, I pay him 200,000. Worst case, I make money. He makes a little bit of money. I feel good about that. So anyway, that's I just wanted to share the context of my thinking through this type of thing. But yeah, I'm fine with it. When do you want it to trigger?
I mean, I'm not like coming in here making demands, but like today, I think that I've lived up to the spirit of the trigger that we initially set. And
yeah, I would say February 1st, which is the beginning of our sort of year this year, which when it's the effective date of a lot of the changes we make.
So you're saying retroactively?
Retroactive. Okay. Yeah, so retroactive to February 1st. And
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I think we can, I can't remember if we signed anything about this, but we can figure out how to document this.
Okay. I think there was a DocuSign at one point, I think.
What we can do is we can just, like, do an amendment. And figure out how to write that. I'm over revenue operations of a high growth startup, so I understand how to write contract amendments.
Well, we've got ChatGPT now, so
yeah.
I appreciate that. And like, on the to speak to the devil side, the arrangement I have with the partners of Lesson Knowing Serum is a little bit different, but not wildly different. And maybe I can speak to, like, how it worked out a little bit on my end. So the way in which it's different, I give a lot more in the sense that there were 6 partners originally. My brother and I are the 2 co-founders, and then 4 other partners. The deal was everyone gets the same amount of money, period. But when someone leaves, they kind of reverse vest their way out of it. So it's not like permanent forever, but if someone stays for 10 years, then year 9, they make 9/10 of it. Year 1 after they leave, they make 9/10 of it. The next year, they make 8/10. What ended up happening is 2 people left before the threshold was... you don't get the first 100,000 after you leave because we need to hire a replacement for you. So the first 100,000 goes away, but you get everything above that. We were making less than that when the first 2 people left. So they got their money while they worked here, and then they quit and got nothing. The other 2 partners are still here, and like, they make the same amount of money as me, and they always will. And I've definitely had people be like, wait, your head of customer service is making the same amount of money as the CEO of the company? And it's like, well above market rate for a head of customer service. Hi, Michael. I know you listen. Love you, Michael. Glad you're still on the team. But like, I've had people be like, don't you regret that deal now that the company worked and now that you're kind of like, maybe you were arguably underpaying some people early on, but now you're arguably overpaying it. And it's my philosophy on it is exactly what you're saying is like, yeah, I could look at it and be like, maybe there was a model here where I could make 500,000 a year right now instead of 2 something. And also 2 something is plenty of money for me. Like I'm working with people I'm good friends with, and I make plenty of money, and I'm not going to be mad that they also make plenty of money.
yeah, it's greed fundamentally, right?
Yeah, like that, yeah, exactly.
That's what the devil is saying. Now there is like a downside scenario here, which is like our relationship could take a turn, but then it's like, okay, like did this thing vest? If it did, that means you provided 50%, the trigger for 50%, which we just approved, and 5 years. Like value was created, and I owe you for that. And this is the deal I made.
I think realistically, if that happened, or like if one of the partners left Lesson Ring Serum right now. Anyway, they would, there's a good chance that we'd go to them and be like, hey, would you rather just take a lump sum right now? If we have the money.
Hey, work out a deal.
Yeah, there's nothing stopping when you sign when you give equity to someone or anything like that, there's nothing stopping you from making a deal later on if it doesn't make sense for both parties to still be involved.
The caveat here, though, is like who you make the deal with changes what like how they're going to handle renegotiation in the future. And I know that like the money is, I think for both of us, this entity, the money is less important than the experience in the relationship and doing what's like living up to our like who we want to be standards. And so I know that's true of you. I know it's true of me. And so at the end of the day, who you do the deal with, you got to know who you're getting in bed with. And
right.
In this case, like I know that we'll work it out if we hit the hell switch.
And there are lots of examples of this going wrong, of people being every bit as confident as you are and then being wrong. Like maybe I go crazy and betray you or whatever. And like, this is a thing I never hear people talk about is like, everyone knows starting a company is risky and you have to have a risk tolerance to do it. This is one of those types of risk tolerance that I wish people talked about in this way, which is like
trusting people.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, yes, you might get burned. You might lose a friendship. And also if it works, you'll have a stronger friendship and you'll make more money. And like, that's part of the risk of it. And I've taken that risk with my brother with Lesson Ring Serum. I started a food blog with my mom. That was a big success by food blog standards. One of those partners that left was a good friend of mine and it did hurt our relationship. So I've also seen the other side of this. Net overall, I'm in the game of take this risk because I think the upside's a lot bigger. Well, the upside and downside are both huge, but like the upside is so rich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I can't add anything to what you just said. It's beautiful.
Cool. Well,
my relationship with you is a product of that. My relationship with JD is a product of that. Like it's like, I remember when I recruited JD to Zane Benefits, we were friends. And I was like, hey, I really think you should come work with me at Zane Benefits. Worst case, it doesn't work out, but best case, we develop a relationship that's far beyond what we have today. And that has been totally true.
Yeah, for sure. I always feel sad for people when they're like, don't be friends with the people you work with or, you know, all this. Cause like one day you'll leave the company or they might betray you. They might, you know, and it's like, what a sad state to be in to just constantly be on the defense about that. Like, I don't know. I get it though. It does really suck when it goes wrong.
Yep. It's bad.
Anyway. well, thanks. That was easy.
What else?
I've got, normally I try to end in, 5 till, but I can go all the way to the hour if you'd like here. I wanted to, well, do you have any smaller updates? I have some topics, but I think they're probably bigger.
Yeah, I have one, I have two really quick ones actually. I hate taxes. I've done my personal taxes, but I just finished leg up taxes, and it's super painful now because it like I feel like I'm stealing money from JD. We paid our accountant $1,250 to file taxes, and it's such a simple tax return, and we lose money. Like we lost money last year, and we won't pay taxes for many years, most likely because of the loss we've accrued over the last few years. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it's like why? I just feel like this is like highway robbery. It's probably
but
how people feel about
it. There's not
think. Better options. Like I wish it was $500. It's done and I'm glad it's done, but I feel bad about it. But the cool thing is like, you know, in terms of our partner distribution, we're getting in the habit of accruing 15% of profit for, tax savings and paying taxes at the end of the year. What's cool is I don't expect us to pay taxes for a few years, but we're building that in anyway, which means that 15% is going to open up at some point when we want it to be reinvested back into the business. And that makes me excited.
Yeah. I really wish we'd taken this approach from the beginning, but I agree. Taxes suck. I think we pay something like, I want to say it's $8,000 a year at Less Annoying CRM. And we could probably shop around and get cheaper, but I do think ours are a little more complicated than LegUp Health, but honestly probably not like way more complicated. And it's a pain in the ass, and it's always like, it's never done for me. It's never done until like April 15th. They're going to send me something and be like, you have to sign this today. And
I hate it. Are you a C corp or are you guys partnership? How do you guys file?
We are an LLC that, files as a, it's always the one people are always like, oh, I bet it's a C or an, and it's the other one. I forget. I confuse C corp and S corp, but it's the one you wouldn't think.
probably C corp. C corp means that you don't get taxed at the corporate level. You get taxed at the owner's level.
No, so I think it's the other way. Then
does Less Annoying pay the taxes, or does do you and Bracken pay the taxes?
Less Annoying pays the taxes.
Yes, cool. C corp.
So maybe that is okay. So yeah. That is the way you'd expect it to be. Okay.
I would. That's the way I expect it to be. But most people expect it to be S corp, or because you generally it's better for you as the owners.
Yeah,
like, you're leaving tax money on the table. I'm leaving tax money on the table by having a C corp.
Yeah, and the reason we do that is I just thought it would be a lot simpler. So first of all, I just pay myself as an employee, and this is like probably hugely tax inefficient. But like I have a W-2, it makes my personal taxes easier, and it especially simplified things with our partnership agreement because it's like everyone gets paid the same amount, and it felt kind of weird figuring out, well, if I'm getting distributions but you're getting paid W-2, like how do you so I'm probably paying way more taxes than I need, but yes, it was just so much simpler to be like, the company has money, it pays everyone in the exact same way, way simpler.
That's exactly my approach. Now, every time I talk to an accountant, they're like, don't you want to take this loss on your personal tax return so that you can offset your other gains and pay less taxes? And I'm like, nope.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to like sound really overly critical here. But again, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts with rich people on them. There is nothing more pathetic in the world than being rich and spending all your time thinking about taxes. Like, what is the point of having money if you're just going to worry about this thing that doesn't matter to you anymore? Just pay your fucking taxes. I don't get it.
I think people who are super rich are in the habit of making money, and they cannot break it once they get rich.
Yeah, it's like pathological. I kind of get it as like a, you know, you play Mario, like the first NES version of Mario, and you want like coins, but it's like the coins don't do anything for you, but you want more, you know? So I kind of get that this is like a lizard brain thing, but how sad is it that people are like, I'm in the Fat Fire subreddit where there's all these rich people who are retiring, and they're all like, I need to move to a state with low taxes. And it's like, the whole point is you're rich enough to retire at age 30 and you're about to move to like Texas. You live in San Francisco and you're going to move to Texas. Are you crazy? Anyway, well, sorry, that's my rant for the day.
That's awesome. Well, the only other update I had is that, I had that meeting. We call it a men's group because it's all men, which I don't like saying out loud. I feel awkward saying out loud, but it's a group of men who get together, a men's group. It was actually really cool. It's about 10 people. And it was much more life oriented than business oriented than I realized it was going to be. And we spent most of the time talking about and assessing. It's been mostly exercises so far. We start the meeting. So it's every once a month at one of the members' houses. Everyone comes over. Everyone's mostly entrepreneurial, but there are some people who have corporate jobs and are, you know, it's mostly people who are professionals who want to grow their professions. But we, you know, you go around and do up kind of like a 2-minute update, you know, of how you're doing. It was way more life oriented than I was expecting, because I missed the first meeting. Right now we're working through an exercise, as a group, but like individually around like what our level 10 life looks like. And basically creating a vision and a scale around 8 dimensions, on what like a 10 is and what, you know, and then self-assessing where you are. And I was super surprised at the impact that is having on me in terms of, realizing where I am on certain things.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. We don't have a ton of time to dive into this, but like I've said this to you before that I think one of your like, it's not a weakness, but it's like, you know, in a job interview where they're like, what's your greatest weakness? And you list a strength. You're so good at powering through pain that sometimes I think you tolerate more pain than you should. And visualizing what life could be feels like a pretty good antidote to that.
Yeah. It's been a healthy exercise. When I complete the assessment, I'll bring it to the podcast and let you pick it apart.
Awesome.
Anyway, I'm glad I'm doing it. I was very scared to do it from a time commitment standpoint, but I think it's going to be really healthy for me.
That's great. Cool. Looking forward to the updates.
Any other things you want to talk about?
No, let's call it.
All right. If you'd like to review past topics and show notes, visit startuptolast.com. See you next week.
See ya.